So we're going to start up here at the beginning, as where you usually start. So maybe we'll all do it together. Come on. All right. And so what I want you to be paying attention to is, what are you curious about? What are you learning? And what are you surprised?
My name is Celia Cutts, and I'm the Rensselaer Youth Outdoors Coordinator. We, our crew of seven, Earth Day at Oakwood, went down to the Focus Lab and got to interview Rafe, who's the director there, and his colleague Jake, and also read the little pieces about the finding of the Hudson by Henry Hudson and the indigenous people and the lives that they live and lived there, and then the impact of the industrialization on the watershed, and then some generative ideas.
So can someone read the first part aloud?
The Hudson River is one of the most dynamic watersheds in the world. Finding its source in the lake tier of the clouds, the river winds its way 315 miles past countless small cities and towns to its mouth in New York Bay. The Mohican Nation called it Mahikanituk, or the river that flows both ways, as the Hudson is a tidal estuary all the way up to the first lock just north of Troy, New York.
Has anyone been to the locks? Do you know what a lock is?
Yeah, I have been.
Yeah,
I think.
All right, can someone read this paragraph? Someone else?
The river has always been a critical corridor of settlement and cultural meaning. The Lenape, Wappinger, and Mohican people all developed a rich river heritage around the Hudson that proved crucial to their way of seeing the world. During European colonization, the river became an essential transportation spine and played a central role in the fight for American independence. In the early years of the Republic, the Hudson River School of Painting conveyed an idealized American landscape as a manifestation of the pastoral sublime waiting to be explored and conquered.
Okay, whoa, there's a lot in that paragraph. Anyone know? You guys talk about European colonization. I know you do. You're all from different places in the world. What do you think about this? When you read this, do you have any questions or things that come up for you? What have you been learning about colonization?
We don't like it.
We don't like it. What don't you like about it?
I don't know. It's just like not fair to the indigenous people of the land.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you say?
Because, you know, it wipes out like cultures and stuff when you colonize lands.
Yeah, it's going to be really harsh on the people who live there or the people of color, things like that. Yeah. Okay, let's see what else it says. The Hudson River School of Painting conveyed an idealized American landscape, right? Has anyone ever heard of Manifest Destiny?
Yeah.
Right? What do you know about Manifest Destiny?
Does that have something to do with the Oregon Trail or something?
Yep.
Oh,
absolutely. Wait,
wasn't it like expanding America to the West?
Yep. Yeah, what, Patrick, what were you going to say?
I was going to say it's like the theoretical God-given right to move people, like, forward and colonize other lands.
Exactly. Right. So there was a myth, an idea, a story put out to excuse the movement of European settlement to displace thousands, hundreds of thousands of indigenous people. It was a total massacre for lots of indigenous people whose home this is and still is. So the Hudson River had a role in helping move colonization forward. It's a complicated place, right? It was also the home, as it says here, of the Lenape, Wappinger, and Mohican. So we are in a crucial spot where history happened.
They interviewed Rafe and Jake and took turns doing that, asking questions. They interviewed each other. They also took some sound bites of background noise, so they were capturing some media to put into this interview.
Do you want to describe what you're seeing here?
I'm seeing a 3D topographical map of... Oh, it changed. It's loading.
It's a projection onto the map. And it's 3D.
It's a projection of the Hudson River and all of its watersheds, and it's like 3D, and it looks pretty sick.
I agree. It does look pretty sick. Is this... This shows, like, part of the watershed, do you think? And do you see how it's, like, along the top part that there's, like, a line? Yeah.
Right now, I'm seeing, like, on this TV screen, a lot of, I'm assuming, tools that
do you fish
the people...
In the
used back then as well.
And so like the indigenous people living near the Hudson?
Yeah. And then you can see this very large kind of like a map of the Hudson River. You can see the watershed, Dodson River watershed, and then the indigenous origins as well.
Mm-hmm. So the different, like the different tribes that were living near the Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
And it also shows a map of the infrastructure of the Hudson River. So like up farther north, the Erie Canal, the second lock, Peebles Island, which. Have you been to Peebles Island?
No, I have not.
No. It's a good place to go hiking and see the river. And then it's also showing like the capital and all the other spots along the river. And there, at the bottom of the map, it says land acknowledgement. It is with gratitude and humility that we acknowledge we are assembling this exhibition on the ancestral homelands of the Muhiakaniak, who are the indigenous peoples of this land. Despite tremendous hardship in being forced from here, today their people reside in Wisconsin and is known as the Stockbridge Munsee community. We acknowledge the atrocities and injustices of our past while also striving for a more just and inclusive future. In the spirit of those great stewards of the land and rivers, may we continue to strive to be better stewards of our shared resources now and hereafter. For more information, visit www.mohican.com. Great. moving farther down. It's like showing the invention of steamships and how it affected like trade on the river, it seems.
Do you already press the button?
Yeah, sure.
Invention of the steamship. Do you know what a steamboat is? It is a boat that has an engine that spins two large paddle wheels. It was first invented by Robert Fulton in 1807. It was often used on the Hudson River because it made it a lot easier to move items from New York City to Troy by steamboat instead of a sailboat. With the steamboat, the trip took almost a day and a half to sail the whole way instead of four whole days.
Did you get any of your information from the native peoples of the Hudson?
Yeah, so that's a big part of what this, particularly this opening part of the exhibit is, because we wanted to really highlight that this is a really unique waterway, and the name of the show, To Flow Both Ways, is about how the at least up to the lock here, right in Troy, is a tidal estuary, which is a really dynamic and interesting body of water that goes up, goes down, you know, and that for us is also kind of a guiding metaphor that we have to, in order to solve, you know, the kind of future crises that are come up, we're going to have to look backwards as well as forwards, right? So a lot of how the indigenous nations use the riverway as a transportation corridor, as a food corridor, they understood the tides, they had a really intimate relationship with the river itself. Like their waterfronts were true waterfronts, emphasis on water, right? In a way that particularly during the age of industrialization, which sort of follows this, we did a great job of kind of cutting ourselves off from the water in terms of being a human space. It became a factory space, an industrial space. So some of the future solutions that we pose, I think, take their cues from the indigenous solutions that were looking us right in our faces, you know. There's some truly futuristic, like, space-age stuff, but then I think some of the most important solutions are like the schooner Apollonia, which is using the power of the wind to deliver goods down to New York City from the Hudson Valley.
So the youth voices that you heard here are Kin, Nia, who also goes by Ren, Jaheim, Galen, Patrick, Bunny, and Satya.